We are 3 weeks into the 2022-23 NBA season, so the rookies should just be starting to get their footing. And in this episode, Richard Stayman, aka Mavs Draft, is going to break down his favorite and not so favorite rookies from this class. Stay tuned. Big shout out to each and every person that has made the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast your first listen of the day. I am your host, Rafael Barlow, the director of scouting for NBA Big Board and the founder of NBA Draft Junkies, and my co-host, Richard Stayman, a.k.a. Mavs Draft. And the Mavs just lost another game. They lost to the Wizards without Porzingis and Bill. So a rough night for Mavs fans, but it's a lot of college basketball on tonight, so we'll talk about that in another episode. But wanted to talk about the rookies. And Richard, how's everything going for you? And is there anybody that has stood out to you or surprised you as far as rookies so far at the 3 week mark in this season?
You know, I you asked how everything's going. I'm finally appropriately dressed, wearing a Mavs shirt, and as you announced me as Mavs Draft, but I have this issue where they just don't win when I where I predict them to, but which is really unfortunate. But as for the rookies, you know, I think the big surprise rookie so far, I want to say it's in an opposite direction, right? Like, I mean, I've been shocked to see Jabari Smith just not know how to play basketball. Like, it's really unfortunate. Like, he's maybe an average defender, at best slightly above average, and his three ball is like below average, and everything else is really bad. It's been really rough. I think he's hurt by the fact there's no point guard there, but you know, ultimately he's still just, he's a number three pick, and he's been easily the worst of the top five that have played this so far.
Yeah, I don't want to pile on to the kid. It's still early in the season, but you know, you can go back to all the past episodes where I talked about it. I was like, if I'm going to take a guy number one, I want somebody that can create his own shot and get his own bucket, a guy that I can give the ball to in the clutch. And you know, everybody was pretty, well, not everybody, but the majority of the people had Jabari number one. He was the guy, but I always felt like he's not a guy that can create his own offense. He's still a year younger than Paolo, or if it's not a full year, it's close. But he's someone that I figured was going to really struggle unless someone spoon feeds him and gives him the ball, sets him up. And Houston looks like they're committed to Porter Jr. and they're committed to Jalen Green, obviously. So, I mean, what's going to change there?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because they're running the whole experiment of can these guys play point at any time? And I think just far and away, the person who's hurt the most is Jabari Smith. Like, I'm with you. I'm not ready to call him, like, any names or anything, like, of where the draft, like, played out or anything. Like, he was still the right pick, I think, at the time. And I still think he's going to turn it around. But, like, how do you overcome the whole they're experimenting with their point guard play? And clearly, he's the one getting hurt from it. So, that's a little bit tough.
But even then, though, I mean, he's still shooting 30% from three. So,
yeah,
and I still thought that he was going to have struggles creating his own shot, because when I watched his film last year, I saw a guy that was a lights out shooter, but I saw a guy that was very, very predictable. No counter moves. If you crowded him in space, one dribble, elevate over the top of guys. Now those same advantages aren't there. Those contested one dribble or no dribble jab step. Face up jumpers, they're not there. And I think the offense is kind of having an impact on his defense. He's had a couple games, I guess the last game, where he looked like he kind of turned it around. I guess the game before, I think he only had like 4 points or something like that. But I've said all along, and I got the tweets, and this is one of my issues with the NBA, is that in a fair tryout, in a fair training camp, he is not the starter. Tari Eason or Kevin Martin Jr. are the starters in a fair tryout or fair training camp where there's, and it's just my opinion, it doesn't mean it's right or it's wrong, where if there's like no incentive of losing and you have to play the five best guys that you think are going to contribute to winning, I didn't think that he'd be the starter.
Yeah, I know people that like Tari more. Tari hasn't been like incredible. He's definitely been probably better, but he also has added like a different role. I still think, you know, Jabari Smith can be that guy. It just, the problem is now, like, his whole thing is he has to be able to shoot. Like, otherwise he's borderline, it's hard to say, like, he's just really hard to keep as a positive. Like, if his three's not falling, there's other guys who are 3 and D that they can make an impact elsewhere, but his defense just isn't enough. Like, his torso is really stiff. It was something that somebody pointed out to me, and like, I just can't unsee it. And like, just on turnarounds, anytime he has to go to left to right or right to left, it is slow. It is slow for somebody who's such a good defender, because like that just shouldn't be a thing. And kind of like you said, though, like the whole stigma of the number 3 pick got him the starting position, not because he was so good.
Yeah, that's my beef with the NBA. And I get it. I totally get it from every side. I get it from the player side. Hey, you invested in me. You drafted me this high. If you're not starting me, then it can mess with the confidence. And I get it. If you're the general manager, you want to keep giving your guy as many opportunities. You want to hope that he figures out. Again, it's super early. It's still only 3 weeks into the season. He has plenty of time to turn it around. But again, I felt that Eason, and I'm an Eason guy, is going to, he doesn't need a point guard to impact the game. He's going to get his own rebounds. He's going to turn defense into offense. He's going to hustle. He'll get you points cutting, so on. And I think if he played 25, 26 minutes a game, he averaged a double-double. And so,
as a rookie?
Yeah.
As a rookie, right? You mean that now? Like,
right now, if he played 28 minutes a game, he'd average a double-double. I think if you look at the stats, he's probably averaging like 6 rebounds a game, and I don't even know how many minutes he's playing.
I'm going to pull this up. That honestly kind of sounds true, because I think he's, yeah, per 36, it adds up. 17 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, got 3 steals, 1 block.
What's he shooting from 3 still?
It's up to, I think I just X'd out of it. It is 45%. But the problem is he's 10 of 22. So like it's good for what he's done so far, but like
10 of 22 from 3, that's a deep, I mean, 3 weeks.
Yeah,
that's
a decent, but it's a small sample. Yeah.
I mean,
it's only like less than 2 a game.
Less than 2 a game, but that's still a decent sample.
Still good though. Like, you can't take away like what he's done. It's been really good.
If you would have bet $1,000 on who would shoot a higher percentage from 3.
Yeah.
And there's what a 15% differential. You would have thought it was the other way around. But I'm an Eason guy. I'm biased. And, like I say, open tryout. I would even play Kenyon Martin Jr. I think he's been really, really good. I don't know what his long-term role is with the team, but it's going to be very, very – I shouldn't even say it's going to be interesting. We already know what the situation is going to be. He's going to have the most chances to succeed. All right, before we get into break, what are your thoughts on, we'll talk about Bankero later on, but what have your thoughts been about Keegan Murray so far?
Yeah, I like Keegan. Actually, one thing just to kind of emphasize this, I promise this will play into Keegan. I'm not like sidetracking, but one thing with Tari, just last thing you said, if you thought the roles were reversed, kind of plays into free throw percentage mattering. Tari Eason had a better free throw percentage than Jabari Smith out of college. So like, this is another, we talk about those indicators. That's something to look for. But as for Keegan, somebody who also shot very well from the free throw line in college, I mean, his number was only 75.5%. That's still pretty good for a forward. I've loved everything about his game so far. He just fits. He plays defense. He turns it into offense, like you said. He honestly is kind of similar to Tari Eason, just I think a little bit smoother, more especially as a shooter. But he's just been a great fit in every single role the Kings have asked him to play, right? So off ball, he can do it. A little bit of on ball creation, he can do it. Be the hustler and kind of be the hustle guy, I should say, and do the dirty work on the defensive end. He can do it. He's just able to wear any hat and he does it proudly. And I think it really helps the Kings win. Like, I mean, the Kings are not a bad team and he's a major part of that statement, which I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but for the Kings, that's major progress.
I mean, what are they going to do with him and Sabonis? They're missing like rim protection. Their best offensive lineup is with those two together. What are your thoughts long term about what they should do?
They should draft Victor Wembanyama. No, I think the overlap that I'm curious about, and this could kind of be an answer, is I think Keegan Murray and Harrison Barnes are very, very similar players. And if you could turn Harrison Barnes into a trade, like you can make him expendable, like you turn him into a center if you miss out on Wembanyama or whoever ends up being the second best big of Ware and Lively. I think they're both going to be top. The winner of who's better will be a top 5 to 7 pick. I think if you miss out on both of those guys, I think you could turn Harrison Barnes into a center that's unhappy on the market. Don't really know who that is. Who knows? Even if the Wizards do some weird stuff, they're always a candidate to be weird. He'll get Porzingis next to Sabonis. I actually like that fit a lot. But I think that's their best route is honestly, because I think Keegan Murray is the real deal. And at this point, if you're picking long-term between him or Harrison Barnes, I'm taking Keegan Murray. And because of that, I would this whenever possible, I mean, maybe even the trade deadline, it might be a little bit rushing it. If you can get a really good big man, that's like a starter level with, you know, can get a double-double easily. You might want to look at maybe a Harrison Barnes trade. It's a little bit bold, but that's kind of my path I would go.
All right, we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth when we return. But right now, I want to talk about these new hires. So if you are a company and you're looking for a potential new hire, go to LinkedIn Jobs. Because every new potential hire, it can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. And that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. So just use the hashtag hiring frame or add the hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word and let people know that you are hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience. So you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It is why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus the leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That is linkedin.com/lockedonNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, once again, shout out to each and every person that has made the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast your first listen of the day. Now, for your second listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights that only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. All right, it's Rafael Barlow with Richard Stamen. And we have been talking about just a few of the rookies from the 2022 class. And we left off talking about Keegan Murray. All right. So let's say the Kings missed the playoffs for like the 17th year in a row. Very likely. They get the number one pick. So you got Wembanyama. You have Sabonis. And you have Keegan Murray. Do you think Keegan Murray can play the three? Or do you think his best advantages are him at the four?
I think you can do both. I think it's something that it depends who you're playing. I primarily want him at the four. Oddly, with this lineup, I think it would depend on roles, right? Like, say you get Victor Wembanyama at one. I think that allows Keegan Murray to be at his best roles because at that point, it's just who's playing what. You have Sabonis being just the mismatch offensive big who can run offense through the post. And then Wembanyama being, you know, just a cheat code. And I think from there, that's like a free spot, right? Like, I think that just kind of is a wild card that can play into any other role. And because that you can play Keegan Murray the same way they're playing him now. He can wear any hat, the off ball, on ball, hustle, just kind of do the dirty work any given night. So in theory, I'd probably want him to be a four. But with this Kings roster, knowing what they're looking like, I would say probably as a three is the most realistic path in this scenario.
All right, I got a question for you. If Jaden Ivey and Benedict Mathurin switch teams, would it be a better fit than where they're at today?
Oh, that's tough. Because Rick Carlisle is better, I think, at developing guards, like high-level guards.
Dennis Smith Jr. disagrees.
Fair, but also Dennis Smith Jr.'s best season ever was in Dallas, so...
Yeah, it's the only season that. Well, I mean, I guess he's getting out. I mean, he's having a good season
in Charlotte right now, but The way I look at it is like, you know, he's done great things with other point guards. I mean, I loved how he developed. Obviously, it's a little bit different with like JJ Barea. I think he did play a role in developing Luka, whether people want to admit it or not. Luka obviously is already great, but I do think there is some factor in there. But ultimately, I think they're kind of best where they're at now. The way Benedict Mathurin is at, I think this is a 10 out of 10 scenario. I don't think you can get better in Detroit. Maybe a little bit by playing with Cade Cunningham, but like Tyrese Haliburton's probably a better situation for Mathurin than Ivy and Haliburton, and then also the same other way around, right? Mathurin and Cade probably is a little bit lower of a ceiling than Haliburton.
You think so? So I think that you make it puts Cade in position to be the primary all the time. He doesn't have to play off the ball. It gives him the floor spacer and the shooter. So if Cade is posting up, I mean, you can't double off Mathurin's man. And then I think if you switch him and do you have Ivy on the Pacers, then you have a guard that is able to get into the paint, get free throws. That's kind of like the opposite of what Haliburton does. But I think it would have been an interesting fit if they swapped roles. Both guys are playing really well. Have you been surprised by Mathurin's production so far?
I'm going to sound cocky. Like, no. There are some that have been surprising. Like, I think it was Wednesday night. He had 22 points in the first half with half of the second quarter. He had 11 minutes, 22 points. But I also had Benedict Mathurin as my number five player, and this is kind of how I expected a number five player to play. So, like, yes and no. And some of these flashes have been remarkable, and that surprises me that they're so good. But also the fact that he's been probably the second best rookie doesn't surprise me that much.
So I had two guys that I had the same opinions about. One was Benedict Mathurin, and then the other was Devin Vassell a couple years ago. And I was like, at the very minimum, these guys should be like your 3-and-D floor spacers. But if they put it together, add a little bit more off the dribble, then they turn into 20-point scorers. And so far, Mathurin looks like he's that guy. Because when I watched this film his freshman year, he was a good shooter in college. He got to the rim. Where he was an efficient finisher at the rim, but it was mostly off cuts and offensive rebounds, just kind of off activity. Not a lot of just creating off the dribble. He came back as a sophomore, added that to his game. You started to see him play as a pick-and-roll ball handler a little bit more, using ball screens. And then this third year since leaving high school, he's putting it all together. And I think he's going to be an all-star. I think that his play might be pushing the Pacers out of the Wembanyama sweepstakes. So, I mean, it's not like they're really good, but they're not bottoming out like a lot of people thought they would. I mean, they still have an opportunity to trade Turner and Hield, but we'll see if that happens. I'm struggling to find a landing spot right now that makes sense for both of them other than the Lakers, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And yeah, trade deadline is going to be exciting. All right, when we return, we'll talk about Paolo Banchero and his hot start, and then I'll ask Richard his opinion on a few other rookies. Stay tuned. All right, once again, it's Rafael Barlow with Richard Stamen, and we are covering some of the rookies in the 2022 NBA class. All right, we got to talk about Banchero. Banchero was my guy all year round. I am not surprised by his production. It is like record-setting production so far. We were at the first game where he didn't score 20, but he's been very, very good. I watched the entire game against the Kings where he had like 30 points. I don't remember the exact stat line, but it was like 30 points, 15 rebounds or something like that. At the end of the game, he was the closer. Even though they lost the game, he was the closer that I anticipated him being because they put the ball in his hands. He made a few good plays as like the ball handler. He made a few good decisions, made passes, knocked down shots. I think he's head and shoulders above the rest. Well, I thought he was head and shoulders above the rest of this class, but Mathurin is he's not too far behind him. Have you been surprised with Banchero's play?
No, my biggest regret from the draft with Paolo was I had him number one until end of February, because there was a stretch where he was shooting like it was 10 games. He just couldn't find the rim, I guess, like, are you going to find the bottom of the net, where he shot like sub 40%. I think I took that stat, that like 10 game stretch, and it was against good competition. I think I took it a little bit too much at face value, and didn't really look at the why, because I remember the first 2 months of watching him. I mean, I tweeted, I was like, he needs to be on the Magic. Like, he's going to change the franchise. You know, the way you look at him, he's 6'10", almost 6'11". Like, he's pushing 6'11". And the way he can shoot over guys, I remember that first game, I want to say it was Kentucky. Was that who they played at the opener? Yeah. I remember he was doing these turnaround fades. I'm like, look, I've only seen one guy do this, like at this size, this effortlessly, and it's Kevin Durant. And that's why, like, I'm not shocked, but I also am shocked that it's been this consistent, because I expected that 10 game stretch to kind of plague him for inconsistency, and that's just not been it at all. I mean, we talked about it, like, that he's had what, one game of not scoring 20 points, or he's had two actually. And like, even that Kings game, which, by the way, that stung really badly as a just liking the Magic, 33 points, 16 rebounds, 4 assists to 1 turnover on 14 of 26 shooting. Like, that's absurd. When you're not a guard and you have that good of an assist to turnover ratio with the ball in your hands that much, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so here's the thing about that 10-game stretch. I wasn't worried about it, and he more than made up for it, in my opinion, in the NCAA tournament. I mean, he shot like 40% from three at the tournament. And right now, the three ball is still a work in progress. Once he gets that going, and Orlando still has, I mean, he can get his own shot. And, I mean, they have some capable distributors. But, I mean, when I say capable, I mean like Franz, Suggs is capable. But I'm saying, like, if he had like a point guard that could get him the ball in pick and rolls, or even like good post entries, man. And I was high on him all year round. I was super high on him. I underestimated him. I thought that he was, and the comparison I made often was, he is going to be Detroit Pistons first year Blake Griffin. So I think that was 18-19 or something like that, where he averaged like 23-10-5 or something like that. I think Bancaro is going to end up being a 25 to 27 point per game scorer. He might even hit 24 this year.
I mean, would it shock you if he ever won a scoring title? Like, it wouldn't for me.
No. And you know what? His funny thing is, I think he should pay attention to Luka, right? How Luka this year, even though he's kind of wearing down in the fourth, he has been efficient, because he's like, he's posting up more and he's driving through guys and he's just seeking out these mismatches. Now, Bancaro's a good passer. I mean, he's not the same passer as Luka, but he's bigger. So I think if he starts to like have the ball in his hands and he's like seeking out these mismatches with these teams that switch everything, and he just starts backing them down, I mean, like, I could see him possibly contender for a scoring title. And then don't give him floor spacers around him, then, or you know, like a point guard, like that's a really good setup guy, table setter, then yeah, I think he can.
Yeah, and like, you look at rookies, generally their numbers don't peak at rookie year, right? So assume that's true. He has 8 free throw attempts per game right now. Like, I don't know if double digits is a lot to ask, but I don't think he's even mastered the art of drawing fouls too. So you combine that plus 3-point shooting, like, the ceiling for scoring is way higher than I think people realize.
Yeah. But let's talk about Shaedon Sharpe, a guy that a lot of people knew absolutely nothing about. And he is playing a role on one of the best teams in the NBA. Portland is now 8-3. What are your thoughts been on Sharpe so far?
Dude, I remember we did the prediction. We were like, who's going to be in, who's going to be out kind of thing, of who's just like every year is a random top 10 guy that everybody's like, oh yeah, what happened to this guy? Shaedon Sharpe ain't him. I guessed that he would be, and just not at all. I really like what he's brought to the table. He's got functional athleticism. Like, he is really using that athleticism to his benefit and that length, right? Like, we've seen multiple plays where, I mean, that was those super long arms. He's just finishing around and just going around the big man. It doesn't bother him. His shot looks really nice. He is still learning a lot of the ins and outs. I think defensively you see that, but the upside is very real while being able to be a at least like limited contributor right now. And I think that's, he's really promising for a guy who went from high school to NBA by all means, like in terms of competitive basketball. It's pretty impressive.
His trajectory is crazy. 2 years ago, he wasn't even a top 100 recruit. And it's the sky's the limit. I mean, Portland is in a really, really good situation. I know a lot of people are going to question if they can sustain this, but 8-3, I'm a Blazers fan, right? And it is very cool to see we have athletes on the team. I felt like Portland was one of the least athletic teams in the last few years. Now I'm seeing lobs to our wings. I mean, when has Dame had a vertical lob threat as a wing? Like, I don't remember. I mean, I've seen like just the plays that Sharp is making, the plays that Grant, and then you got Keon Johnson, who is a really good athlete. So Blazers have exceeded my expectations. I thought they'd be good. I thought they'd be a playoff team, but they've exceeded my expectations. All right, lastly, let's talk about the rookies from the Thunder. What have your thoughts been on Jalen Williams and Usman Jang so far? I know Jang played a game in the G League. I saw that.
Yeah, I actually watched that one yesterday too. I think Usman Jang is going to be really good. I buy his defense. And I also think Jalen Williams looks good down there. While the second round Jalen Williams, I forgot that they have two. And I have to clarify that every time, but I think he's somebody who he's going to fit that Thunder profile. And then the real Jalen Williams, if you want to call it, the one who's actually up with Oklahoma City, the Thunder, not the Blue. Jalen Williams has been impressive when he's been able to play. Like, I know he's missed a couple games, but God, some of the stuff that he flashed at Santa Clara, it's just so real. The ambidexterity is just, it's so smooth. And if I'm not mistaken, he was a big part of that. I have to double check before I say something potentially dumb, but I'm pretty sure he was part of that Dallas comeback, right?
I mean, I saw a lot of Isaiah Joe.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's just not say that name ever again, please.
I saw a lot of Isaiah Joe.
Had a good game that night too.
Yeah. And I mean, just switching gears here. Why didn't the Lakers? I don't know. Maybe they didn't have a priority. Maybe it was he got waived and it was a priority and the Thunder had a higher priority. Maybe that's the case. But if you look at the Lakers, you can say, like, man, a guy like Isaiah Joe would have been a really good fit. Or Watanabe, who's shooting like 54% from three for the Nets. It just seems like, I may get in trouble for saying this, it just seems like it was a clutch priority in the offseason. Troy Brown, Lonnie Walker, Toscano Anderson, those aren't guys that I would say are going to be the complimentary floor spacers that LeBron and Anthony Davis needed. And so I feel like there was guys that you could have got really cheap that would have had, you know, a single role of knocking down open shots. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe Max Christie is that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I do think Lonnie Walker was probably the lone one of them. But, I mean, even last year he shot 31%. Before then, he'd have been average at worst or league average or better from three. I do think he kind of makes sense. They also, 2 years in a row, have done this buy low thing on the unrestricted guys of their first year in free agency. Like, they did Malik Monk last year, and then they did Lonnie Walker, and I fully expect like Nikhil Alexander Walker or something next year. But I think, you know, that part I can understand. But yeah, I'm just same boat. It's like, I think they sometimes, I feel like this is any team, not just the Lakers, but the relationships over what you actually need can throw teams off in a lot of ways. And I think the Lakers are showing that very publicly compared to what other teams do. So a lot of teams do it much more subtly than the Lakers do.
Yeah, this is the most obvious since CAA was running the Knicks. But then again, there was a time where the Bucks had like all XL guys. You had Thon Maker was drafted 10th. You had Rashad Vaughn was a first round pick. there was a big XL. It was somebody else that I forgot that. I mean, it was like XL was running the Bucks, and then, I mean, they broke that group up, and I think they've been pretty good since. Well, all right, man, that wraps up this episode. Big shout out again to each and every person that has made this Locked On NBA Big Board podcast a success. We definitely appreciate it. Now, for your next listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. The biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. It is available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Rafael Barlow. He is Richard Stateman, a.k.a. Mavs / Magic Draft, also known as the Clip God. Check him out on Twitter. And then also, I have an NBA Big Board Draft Guide that will be dropping within the next, maybe by the time you listen to this, it may be out, the next 24 to 48 hours. It is over 100 prospects deep. I have strengths and weaknesses. I have quotes from different scouts. I have their roles or the player I have, like where I think they're going to be, whether they're going to be an all-star, a rotation player, a training camp guy. I've even broken it down to what is the best role for this guy, for a player, whether he's used as a old school big, energy guy, catch and shoot wing. So I've put a lot of time into it. I can't wait until I'm done. A lot of proofreading. So it will be on the NBA Big Board newsletter. So check it out. All right. Once again, it's Rafael with my guy Richard, and we are out.